The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hi everyone, thanks for attending our webinar on Medicaid reform advocacy. I'm Rochelle Bourne with Housing Action Illinois, and I'm going to turn this over to Amber Smock, the Director of Advocacy at Access Living, and we are just waiting for a couple more people to join. This is a full webinar, and we'll be beginning shortly. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, everyone. This is Amber Smock, the Director of Advocacy for Access Living. And I just want to let you know that we're still waiting for just a couple minutes because over 100 people are registered for this webinar, and we can see how many people have actually joined the call. And right now, we're about halfway there, so we just want to give it a couple minutes in order to allow the most amount of people to join for the beginning. So just hang on for just a couple more minutes there. Thank you. Okay. All right, so this is Amber. We're going to go ahead and get started. First, I would like to thank Housing Action Illinois for inviting me to participate in this webinar and talk about Medicaid reform and what's going on in Illinois this spring. So, Rachel, thank you very much for that. And also thank you to the other staff at Housing Action Illinois for having me here. This is a little bit of a strange setup because I can't hear any of you due to the computer setup. But we can see your questions that you can enter in the webinar software. And what's going to happen is when you type in your questions, we'll be able to see them. And then at the end, we're going to go ahead and address as many of those questions as we can. So we're going to go ahead and get started here. As you should have on your screen, the slide that says Spring 2012, What to Know About Medicaid Reform Advocacy. And you can see the Access Living logo. That's where I work. Access Living is located at 115 West Chicago Avenue in downtown Chicago. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what Access Living is, our investment in housing advocacy, and then we're going to talk about Medicaid and what's going on with it and what the potential concerns are for us in our state working with people with disabilities and people who are low income and all kinds of folks who rely on Medicaid. And then we're going to talk about the Keep Medicaid Strong principles and the coalition work that's going on around that. And last of all, we're going to talk about the people who are power players in Medicaid reform. Many of you may know who these people are already, but it's good to have everybody on the same page. And then we'll talk about where we're going to go from here. So first of all, just to talk a little bit about Access Living. I'm going to change the slide. Access Living is the Center for Independent Living for Metropolitan Chicago. There are over 20 centers for independent living across the state of Illinois. I know some of you are staff at Centers for Independent Living, so my peers at other centers, it's great to have you with us. Access Living, our focus is on independent living advocacy and legal services to empower people with disabilities to live in the community. And we've been doing that since 1980 here in Chicago. We do local, state, and national advocacy in a variety of sectors. And my responsibility is to oversee about 15 staff who work on policy and or organizing for disability rights. So not only do we do housing, but we also focus on health care, education, youth, women and girls, immigration, all kinds of things affecting people with disabilities. And in general, looking to advance the rights of people with disabilities and community living in Illinois. Going to the next slide, since 1988, 8 years after Access Living started, we have been doing a wide range of things to advance housing for folks with disabilities in particular. We have a federally funded fair housing testing program and fair housing cases that we pursue for people with disabilities. We do community integration work for people leaving nursing homes. So we assess whether people are ready to leave nursing homes, We help them locate housing, and then we help them through the moving process to live in their own homes in the community. We're very much about affordable, accessible, and integrated housing. We do housing policy advocacy at a variety of levels, so local, state, and national. We work closely with the Chicago Housing Authority. We talk to HUD, we do all kinds of things to make sure to open up opportunities for people with disabilities in housing, as I know many of you do for all kinds of folks needing affordable housing. And finally, we do grassroots housing organizing. Our group is called the Disability Rights Action Coalition for Housing, or DRAC. And DRAC takes on issues at the grassroots level, such as rental assistance for people with disabilities, advocating for more rental assistance from the state and from the Chicago Housing Authority, trying to find opportunities for doing that. And one of the best things about involving grassroots folks with disabilities in housing advocacy is people can go right up to folks who have the power to make decisions and say, I am someone with a disability who needs affordable, accessible, integrated housing, and this is what I need you to do. And it's a very powerful thing, as I'm sure many of you know. So we do all kinds of work on housing, and we partner with Housing Action Illinois and many other folks across the state to work on this issue. And truly, I believe it's one of the top issues for people with disabilities in the country. We're not going to solve the problem of disability discrimination and integration unless we solve the problem of how to find housing. So let me go ahead and talk about Medicaid, and I'm going to explore it in the next slide. And so I'm just going to review this a little bit. The Illinois Medicaid program, and by the way, this information is from the Keep Illinois Medicaid Strong principles. So I took this language directly from the language from that platform. So just here it is. The Illinois Medicaid program provides life-saving health coverage to nearly 2.7 million low-income children, parents, seniors, and people with disabilities and behavioral health needs, including addiction and mental illness. However, the program faces a $2.7 billion deficit this year, and legislators are exploring a range of solutions. We all need to ask, how much does each of these solutions actually cost us in health and long-term care outcomes and state funds? So what we know is that while Medicaid serves a variety of people, the most expensive people are actually the folks who need long-term care solutions. And so one thing that Access Living does is work to make sure that the state spends its Medicaid dollars smart and provide money for home and community-based solutions. And of course, that is directly tied to housing because living in the community is what housing is for. So I want to talk a little bit about who exactly is covered by Medicaid. And as you can see, the problem that we face is that there are mandatory populations and optional populations. There's mandatory benefits and optional benefits from Medicaid. And what's going on right now is that $2.7 billion that the state is looking to cut from Medicaid. Some of that is mandatory spending that they're looking to maybe try to trim, and some of it is optional benefits and services that they're looking to just not do anymore because it costs too much money. So when we talk about Medicaid advocacy, we should be careful to talk about what is mandatory and what is optional. Let me see. Okay, so who is covered by Medicaid? As you can see, mandatory includes children below the federal minimum income level. It includes adults and families with children, Section 1931 TMA. It includes pregnant women at or below 133% of the federal poverty level. It includes disabled SSI beneficiaries, certain working disabled people who, let me put it this way, have a high level of need for in-home support. We're also talking about elderly SSI beneficiaries and Medicare buy-in groups. And something to think about as you're going about doing your work every day is, who are the people that we serve? What kind of Medicaid beneficiary might they be? What qualifies them for Medicaid? And really understanding what qualifies the people that you work for to receive Medicaid will help your Medicaid advocacy a lot. For optional populations, so every state is different in how it structures Medicaid. So the federal government has given states the authority to structure their Medicaid program, and they may or may not serve the following folks, right? So children who are above the federal minimum income levels, adults and children with families, pregnant women who are above the 133% of the federal poverty level, people with disabilities above SSI level, people with disabilities under the home and community-based services waiver. We have one of those here in Illinois, and I can say that it actually, that waiver empowers a lot of my friends and coworkers to be able to work in the community, even though they have a disability requiring a lot of Medicaid support. It also covers optional folks may also be certain working disabled people, elderly folks above the SSI level, nursing home residents above SSI levels, and the medically needy. And when we're talking medically needy, we're talking, of course, about people who, whose medical supports are very expensive and who cannot otherwise afford them. Okay, so going to types of mandatory Medicaid services. These are not all of the mandatory Medicaid services, but hold on 1 second. I have a question here from Sandra asking if we can get a copy of the presentation, and Rachel would be very happy to provide a copy of that presentation by email to those who... Rachel, do you want to give your email address?
Sure. My email is rachelle@housingactionil.org, and we are recording this webinar, so as long as technology works with us till the end, I will be emailing both the slides and the recording, and we'll also be posting it on our website.
Okay. Well, I hope that's helpful for Sandra. Okay. So, and for Alexandra, and yes, okay. So we'll be making sure to email out this slide presentation to those who haven't received it. Okay, so moving on to, we have who is covered by Medicaid. Then we go to types of Medicaid benefits. Okay, I'm trying to make my thing go. Okay, types of mandatory Medicaid services. These are not all, but these are some key ones to give some idea of what is covered by Medicaid. And if you really want to have the full-on list of what are mandatory Medicaid benefits, I suggest that you visit the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services website at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And those guys will be able to have the whole list right there for you. So for example, types of mandatory Medicaid services include nursing home care. It includes doctor services, nurse midwife services, inpatient and outpatient hospital services, and lab and x-ray services. So when you look at these types of services, you can see why there is a lot of advocacy right now from Illinois hospitals, nursing homes, and other medical centers on not cutting Medicaid provider rates, because the Medicaid provider rate is already fairly low on a national standard in Illinois, and cutting it further would prevent people from being able to get these kinds of services. So you go to types of optional Medicaid services, it's kind of appalling what you see is considered optional, quote unquote, optional by Medicaid. So things like dental care, kidney dialysis, durable medical equipment, that includes things like power wheelchairs, scooters, leachers, walkers, anything that's a heavy-duty sort of like technology thing that helps you with mobility for the most part. Things like transplants are considered optional under Medicaid, prosthetics, arms, legs, things like that, plus glass eyes, things like that. Eyeglasses are considered optional. Case management is considered optional, and that's a big concern for many providers out there who are looking at serving people who have a variety of issues in their life. So, for example, somebody who may need housing but who may also have mental illness, may also have, you know, domestic violence situation. I mean, those kinds of folks really need somebody who's helping them keep everything together. So case management is at risk in Illinois. Physical and behavioral therapy is considered optional, and as is respiratory services for people who are ventilator dependent. And believe it or not, I remember when I first started working for Access Living about 7 years ago, I recall that at the time, the state that was undergoing a major Medicaid crisis was Tennessee, because they were converting to a new system called PennCare. And in the conversion to PennCare, everyone who used ventilators but suddenly kicked off the system. And so the risk, the reality of some of these very awful cuts happening is very disturbing and very real. So you can see why not only are providers stressed out and consumers stressed out, but you also have legislators who are very fearful that the decisions that they're going to make in terms of Medicaid funding are going to kill people. And so it's a very, very tense tense situation that we have right now at the state capitol and across the state. Okay, so the more important thing to know, let's see. 67% of Medicaid spending nationwide goes towards acute and long-term care for people who are disabled and or elderly. So we believe, Access Living believes, that examining how to spend less on institutional settings and more on community-based services to people in their own homes would be more cost-effective. So that's a general framework that Access Living stands from, but also many community providers, obviously, stand from. In addition, people need to have opportunities to live in affordable, accessible, integrated housing for that rebalancing of spending to happen. And so many of you have heard of the governor's rebalancing initiative in which she is proposing to close some of the state-operated developmental centers and some of the state mental health centers in order to supposedly reinvest those dollars in community-based services. And that is part of what we in the disability community have called rebalancing for about 20 years. And when we talk about rebalancing, we're talking about spending less of a proportion on of Medicaid dollars on long-term care and institutional settings, and more on community-based services. So it's part of a decades-long trend. But the important thing to know for this particular presentation is that we need to figure out how to spend smarter in Medicaid while at the same time developing improved housing opportunities. So that's why the fact that all of you are sitting in on this conference call is so incredibly important, because you are the ones that are helping make affordable, accessible, integrated housing happen for folks on Medicaid. So let me go to the next slide. So I have considerations for all of us who are here on this call, who work on housing issues and are concerned about folks on Medicaid. We have to worry about delayed payments to providers, and that's not news. That's something that's been going on for a couple of years now. But we have to worry about delayed payments for providers. We have to worry about liability costs. The state's very concerned about paying off its liability, you know, stuff, and that's part of why the budget cuts are so severe. We are also looking at an increased number of people needing Medicaid. In part, it's because we've had the recession and people have lost their jobs and then they became eligible for Medicaid, et cetera, et cetera. So we're looking at an increased number of people needing Medicaid. We should be considering in Medicaid advocacy the focus of spending. So for your organization, where should the focus of spending be? Do you want Medicaid spending to be on institutional settings or on community-based settings? And how is that to your advantage when you make cost consideration arguments to legislators? There is this dire, terrible, awful need to find new revenue. So we know that, for example, the governor, there's been an idea floated about having a tax on cigarettes. That's one example of an idea to find new revenue. So there's a cigarette tax proposal that's at hand, and I just sent Rachel a fact sheet on the cigarette tax from the Responsible Budget Coalition, which has advocated for finding more revenue. And so if you're interested in what the cigarette tax is, basically, if you did impose a cigarette tax on the state, it would raise $700 million in new revenue. And I'm sure we can all think of very good ways to spend that $700 million. So the need to find new revenue is really, really important. And coalitions like the Responsible Budget Coalition are doing good work in that area. Now, something that state legislators have been discussing quite a good deal are avenues to deal with Medicaid fraud. And at Access Living, this is also a hot topic, because what we see is people saying, okay, well, companies or providers are committing Medicaid fraud. And then we also see people saying consumers are committing Medicaid fraud. And in general, it's important for people not to defraud the system. However, given that fraud does happen at all levels, there's a sort of need to figure out where you're going to target your avenues for cutting down on fraud. So are you going to start with providers first, you're going to start with the little guys, the consumers first, et cetera. So that's an ongoing discussion, and I believe there's some bills going through the state legislature right now to try to crack down on Medicaid fraud. So that's important. Then there is the issue of eligibility reviews. So the question of whether or not somebody who is on Medicaid is actually really eligible. And during the President's State of the Union address, a few months ago in Washington, D.C. He talked about the need to review across all the states, you know, the people's status of whether or not they're eligible for Medicaid and Medicare as a way to crack down on fraud. So from the federal level and the state level, there's this concern with finding out whether people on the Medicaid rolls are actually eligible. Now, the situation arises because sometimes people die, and they continue to receive the benefits even though they're dead. So there's things like that. Sometimes there's a question of whether a relative is receiving monies instead of the actual person and so forth. So there's this question of eligibility review. But consider this. In dealing with fraud and eligibility reviews, there's also a question of whether the state actually has the staff capacity to conduct fraud investigations and eligibility reviews. So in your advocacy, what you might want to think about is what is most important for you, just getting money for your people or getting the state to build capacity or what have you. So there are all these different things that are going on, and you should consider like which are the most important for you. What I would like to do is go ahead and talk about the Keep Illinois Medicaid Strong principles. Okay? So these principles were developed by a coalition of folks working on healthcare advocacy, in particular the people who are involved with the Illinois Health Advocacy Listserv. And the coordinating person for the principles has been John Peller, who is the Vice President of Public Policy for the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. And John, working with a number of other folks, came up with the following principles, which I think are very important for people to consider going forward on Medicaid advocacy. So, principle number one is that solutions such as cutting prescription drug coverage, eligibility, or optional services are unacceptable and will drive up long-term state costs. This makes a lot of sense. If you cut people's drugs and, you know, things like that, then people will be more sick or more unhealthy or not able to deal with stuff, and therefore they will need to go into their costly hospital settings. So the services that people on Medicaid receive now reduce future state health spending by providing prevention services and early intervention. Principle number two, transformative Medicaid reforms are being implemented but need time to work. Okay? So to improve the health and lives of Medicaid recipients while reducing costs, Illinois is contracting with commercial managed care companies and networks of providers to implement robust care coordination models. However, these programs cannot be in place overnight. And I'm sure many of you are quite familiar with the implementation of managed care in Illinois and what that's meant for the people that you serve. I'd like to point out that from a federal perspective, I spoke with the disability office at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and I said, you know, look, Illinois is trying to roll out these Medicaid managed care programs really fast, you know, and they said, yeah, you guys really need to watch out because you're really trying to do some cost cutting and you have a budget situation, but you're trying to move things along too fast. So the perspective from the federal agency is that Illinois is moving too fast on implementing Medicaid reforms. Medicaid reform is okay, but you need to do it slowly and with consumer input and provider input. Okay, going to number three. The General Assembly and Governor have underfunded Medicaid for 20 years. A multi-year solution is needed to balance the program budget. So Medicaid reforms enacted in 2011 already established a decade-long glide path to pay old bills, and this plan should be followed. So obviously, the problem that we face didn't just happen overnight. It's been happening for a very, very long time, and so we're just struggling with the fact that what do we do this year? And when I've talked to legislators one after another, and also HFS, they've said, well, we can only plan ahead for the next 6 months. We can only plan ahead for maybe at the most a year. But the problem is, to fix this problem, we need a multi-year solution. So advocating that legislators keep that in mind is incredibly important right now. Okay, principle number four, the Medicaid budget cannot be balanced with Medicaid cuts alone. New revenue and savings from legislative changes in other budget areas must be applied to Medicaid. So Medicaid cannot be firewalled. Sorry, I had to move that slide. Okay. Medicaid cannot be firewalled from the rest of the state budget. is an economic engine that supports families, creates jobs, and helps children learn. That last sentence is one of the most important advocacy statements that I've seen. Just being able to say that, it affects everything, you know? It's incredibly important. I'm sure you can think of many ways to apply that statement to your personal organization. In fact, why not develop a one-page flyer that takes that statement and tells about how it applies to your organization and use that for advocacy with your legislators? That would be really great. But of course, the blowback that we get as advocates advocating for Medicaid, real Medicaid reform and revenue, is that legislators are like, well, we have to stick within the budget line. Like, we can't raise new revenue because I, Senator so-and-so, have signed a pledge not to raise taxes, you know, stuff like that. They say, okay, well, we have a finite amount of money that to do something with. So if you want something, you're going to have to tell us where it's okay, who it's okay to take away money from. So they'll be like, Amber, so you want more money for home and community-based services. Well, are you okay with us cutting child care? Well, of course I'm not okay with us cutting child care. That's ridiculous. I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with taking money away from transplants or dialysis or anything. So we really have to look at, you know, what are we really spending money on? Where can we get new money from? And keep in mind also that Illinois is one of the states that spends the least per person on Medicaid expenses. Illinois is not being stupid about how it spends money on Medicaid. You know, Illinois is being very efficient. In fact, maybe you could say Illinois is being stingy. So we have a very difficult time with the perception of Medicaid being this big, giant, bleeding pig, you know, that's in front of us and that we have to figure out what to do with. The fact of the matter is that we don't have it doing the right things in the right way. And in addition, we also face the difficulty of HJR 69, House Joint Resolution 69, which was passed, I think, at the end of March. And in that resolution, the House of Illinois basically said that Medicaid cuts have to be implemented, and if Medicaid cuts are not implemented, then cuts must be made to other state programs. And so that really is just anathema, offensive to the idea of principle number four, which is, you know, everything needs to work together. So that's very problematic for us. If you would like to sign your organization on to the four principles and, you know, have your organization's name included when John is doing his advocacy, contact John Peller at the AIDS Foundation of Chicago at jpeller@aidschicago.org. I'm sure he would be very happy to have more organizations sign on, and especially because we are now looking at the last 4 weeks of the legislative session, and it's going to end May 31st. And all by all reports, these 4 weeks are going to be incredibly intense periods of negotiation and advocacy around Medicaid. So everybody's going to be going all out, and right now is a good time to position your organization at and where you stand. Okay, so going on to who has the power over Illinois Medicaid reform. I hope you like the pictures. Okay, so as you see, the top left is Governor Pat Quinn. The woman in the middle is HFS Director Julie Hamos, and then the guys in the lower right are Speaker of the House Michael Madigan and Senate President John Collison, all of who are very important in advocacy for Medicaid cuts. Okay, so I just want to basically in this section talk about who in the state administration and the General Assembly have power over this issue, and this may already be very obvious to some of you, but let's just go ahead and go through it. So, obviously, in the state administration, the key players are Pat Quinn, the governor of the state of Illinois, Michael Gelder, who is the senior advisor for healthcare and human services. Michael, as some of you may know, has been a longtime advocate for healthcare issues. He has led the Department of Aging and so forth, and currently holds this key post. So he very much supports community-based services, but it's definitely somebody who's asking for ideas and new ways to do business so we can find solutions. Okay, and then you have Julie Hamos, who is the Secretary for the Department of Health and Family Services, and as you know, Julie is a former state legislator as well. Okay. The General Assembly has a Medicaid committee that was tasked by the governor to come up with a report on Medicaid reform. And at the bottom, you can see the committee was tasked by the governor to issue a report on Medicaid reform by April 17th, but talks have stalled. To date, I don't think that report has yet been issued, but I do know that the state administration has made proposals for Medicaid cuts, and there will be a link to what the state's proposal is later on in this webinar. Okay, so the Medicaid committee, they aim for having two Republicans, two representatives. And so you have Democratic Senator Heather Steen, Republican Senator Dale Ryder, Republican Representative Patty Bella, and Democratic Representative Sarah Feigenfeld. So those four have been working together to try to find a common ground on what to kind of Medicaid. But unfortunately, you know, everybody has different positions. I know that Representative Bella is definitely not for new revenue. That's a problem. I think Dale Ryder is on the same page. Senator Staines and Sarah Feigenfeld are possibly open to the idea of new revenue, but don't think it will happen until next year. And I think they're all divided on what precisely to cut. So that's clearly very problematic. General Assembly leadership, for those who may need a refresher, is, Senate President John Cullerton, he's a Democrat, Senate Minority Leader Christine Redonio, who's a Republican, Democratic Speaker of the House Michael Madigan, and Republican House Minority Leader Tom Cross. If you go to www.ilga.gov, you can find, if you look up the Senate, you can find the PDF that shows the Senate leadership list. Clearly, I made a boo-boo on the House leadership list, but if you go to the same website, ilga.gov, you'll be able to find the House leadership list as well. So I apologize for that one. Okay, so those are the folks that over the next 4 weeks are going to be at the heart of the deal making over what Medicaid reforms will happen, what cuts are going to happen, how are they going to use any potential new revenue, et cetera. So I strongly urge you to concentrate your efforts on those folks. And if you are represented by one of them, ask for a meeting. I mean, just flat out get out there and tell them what you need. Okay. One thing that sometimes is not very clear in press coverage of the Medicaid cuts is that people are talking about Medicaid reform, blah, 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 but it's never really stated what ideas for Medicaid reform might be out there. So I wanted to give you some access to some of the various proposals for cuts and reforms that are out there and to understand who is putting those proposals forward. So as you can see, you have the governor's Medicaid proposal. And you'll be able to find that at illinois.gov. Just look for the governor's Medicaid proposal, and there's the direct link. And, you know, in that, there is a PDF that's a table that shows what the proposed cuts or restrictions and new eligibility requirements might be. And strongly urge that you review that document to understand where the governor is coming from. They may go, in the end, when the legislature and the governor come together and decide what to do with Medicaid, maybe they'll use that proposal, and maybe they'll use something completely different. We don't know, but we do the best we can with sort of the smoke and mirrors aspect of all of this. Anyway, so it's important to know that the Illinois Chamber of Commerce has also put forward a Medicaid proposal. Of course, theirs is going to be geared towards being the best for local businesses. The Illinois Hospital Association has also put forward a Medicaid proposal. If I switch to the next one, Families USA, in connection with the Coalition for Better Healthcare for the state of Illinois, have also put together a study on Medicaid cuts and the impact that may be useful to you. The Center for Tax and Budget Accountability has done a study on human service cuts that may be of interest as well. And the Illinois Policy Institute has put forward a Medicaid proposal. And then finally, there's been testimony and studies on facility closures, and that would be of particular interest for people understanding how the governor's rebalancing initiative may or may not generate funds for, you know, Medicaid home community-based services. Okay, but again, I know these links are incredibly long and complicated, and it sort of dazzles my eye to look at them, But Rachel will be sending out the PowerPoint to everybody who is on the, right? You can send it out to everybody? Okay, so she's going to send it out to everybody. All of you will get a copy, no problem. Okay, let's see. Going to the next slide. So again, what does this mean for you? People needing affordable housing will be more likely to experience more major life crises due to lack of access to health care. So people who need durable medical equipment or dialysis or whatever are going to be much more likely to be forced into nursing home settings or forced out of their own homes, basically, because they won't have access to health care. And so once they lose that housing, how do they get it back? And as you know, that's an incredibly difficult situation to resolve. So this is going to be a big problem for us. As I said on the second line, they may miss opportunities for housing and have to leave housing due to health crises with no fallback housing options. And that's incredibly important for people to understand. I know that at Access Living, we occasionally have consumers that are living in nursing homes who are waiting for Section 8 vouchers. And what happens is sometimes they will have a health crisis and have to go to the hospital, who knows what's going on. Or they're forced to stay in the nursing home because maybe they have a wound that's gotten really severe. And then their voucher comes out. And then they only have a certain amount of time to look for housing and move in and do all that stuff. But at the same time, they're experiencing major health crises and, like, what are they going to do? So, you know, the Medicaid crisis, Medicaid reform effort is going to have a big impact on the housing. Okay. So what can we do? Consider whether the people you serve are served by Medicaid and whether that's going to change their housing needs or status. I mean, just take half an hour, go someplace, go to a cafe, I don't care what you do. Go someplace where you're by yourself and just really think about, you know, how would cuts to Medicaid affect the people that I serve? And write them down on a piece of paper. Take that piece of paper and use it for your advocacy. Make one pager so you can send out to everybody who's a decision maker on this issue. And also know your numbers. Of course, something that I get from legislators is they ask, well, how many people do you serve? How many people are really affected by this problem? If you don't have a number, then you kind of feel silly, right? So know your numbers. How many people do you serve, and how many of those people use Medicaid services? A lot of times, you know, people are kind of coming through your office, and you know everybody's kind of, you know, generally maybe low income, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. They're just kind of people. Maybe they're poor. They have disabilities. But really getting specific with them, like, know that Joe Smith uses Medicaid to pay for his prescription. Being really concrete about that is going to make you a much more effective advocate. Okay. Talk to the General Assembly, please, 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 ASAP. Get in touch with your state legislators this week. I mean, not just this week, but throughout the month of May. But, I mean, really make it a priority to get out there and get in front of the issue. Get in touch with state legislators this week to explain how cuts to Medicaid will affect the people you serve. Consider making appointments with legislators one-on-one. This is good for everybody, but especially if you yourself are an executive director or a program director, I strongly encourage you to do this because you guys are the ones that they really want to hear from. They also want to hear from the grassroots folks who are being affected, but, you know, all that. Okay, and then also consider attending lobby days for your own group or in coalition groups to talk to legislators and be seen at the Capitol. I can't overemphasize how important it is for your consumers to be seen at the Capitol. I mean, get them a t-shirt so they can show where they're from or whatever it is. But at Access Living, what we found to be the most effective strategy is, yes, there are the big, giant lobby days where large organizations flood the Capitol, and that's absolutely fine. But most effective for us is having small groups of three or four people that go about the Capitol and work on talking to legislators. They have an assigned group of people that they're supposed to talk to, and they just work on that. And building that one-on-one relationship with small groups is really, really, really good. So if your organization does not currently have a lobby day, maybe you might want to consider setting one up. And it doesn't have to be a lobby day where you have hundreds of people. Maybe you have 10 people go to the Capitol. That's absolutely fine. In general, the legislature is going to be in session in May, generally Tuesdays through Thursdays. I recommend Tuesdays and Wednesdays is the best way to go. Best days to go down because the legislators, more of the legislators are actually there. Thursdays are there, but they're often leaving in the afternoon, so it's a little bit of a hassle to try to meet with them. But Tuesdays and Thursdays, or try to catch legislators in their home offices when they're there on Mondays and Fridays. That would also be good. I also know that legislators are supposed to be working through Memorial Day weekend. So Saturday, Sunday, and Monday of Memorial Day weekend, they're actually scheduled to be in session. And the reason for that is because we're expected to see some very difficult decisions made in relation to Medicaid, but also things like pension reform. Pension reform is a whole other webinar, and I'm not doing that one right now. Okay. But they are going to be in session. So Tuesdays and Wednesdays in May, if you're going to go to the Capitol, I really recommend going those days. Otherwise, try your best to see legislators in the home offices when they might be a little bit more relaxed. The next thing is also to talk to the state of Illinois. Now, please make sure that the state knows what you're doing. You know, so if you are connected with the Department of Human Services, if you're connected with Department of Health and Family Services, maybe you have more relationships with the Illinois Housing Development Authority. I don't know who, but whoever you work with from the state of Illinois should be able to repeat back to you what it is that you do and why it's important. I mean, try to like really get them to talk, like hear what you're doing and tell you what it is you're doing, because you want them to talk up your issues. The people in the state government can be very good allies for you, as you know. Okay, and then the second point on that particular slide is urge the state to use this current economic crisis as the impetus to develop a long-range state plan to expand affordable housing options. Okay, so yes, we are in crisis, but maybe this is also an opportunity. So, you know, that's the way we look at it in Access Living. So we work very very hard for a very long time to try to expand affordable housing options for people with disabilities. And, you know, for a very long time, it felt like our issues got lost in the mud because, you know, there wasn't enough funding for different things. And so, but our stuff was never a priority. And then once crisis came and things started looking really bad, then people started looking at our issues harder, and that became more of an opportunity for us. So, yes, this is stressful and chaotic and very hurtful to a lot of people, but perhaps this is an opportunity for the state of Illinois to do better. Long-range state affordable housing plan. What are they going to do? So I just recommend that be an ask. And then talking to the media. Okay, so one of the best ways to create pressure around your issues is to talk to the media. Make sure to get in touch with your local papers, TV, and radio. Talk about how people who need affordable housing will be especially affected by Medicaid cuts. If you somehow, I don't know, sometimes people think that TV and news radio are not interested in Medicaid. That's not true, because now Medicaid has become a very hot political issue. And politics, as we know, is all about what people think. So what people are thinking about right now is Medicaid. So get out there and just call up your local radio, call up your local host, or have one of your consumers, somebody who is directly impacted, contact with us, a news show or radio show, call in, whatever they've got to do, and get public about how this is going to hurt us. And it's incredibly important to do because, let's see, it says, personal stories are good for human interest. Ask people who use affordable housing and are on Medicaid to speak out and tell their stories. So say something like, if my Medicaid benefits in this area cut, it may mean that I will lose my home, or it may mean that I will miss an opportunity for housing. That's incredibly important. But send any news media that you generate to your legislators, because they take those editorials and pass them out around to their friends and say, this is what's happening in my district, and I got to fight and stand up for people in my district. So the news media is really important. The very last slide that I have, and it looks like I'm doing okay on time, the 15 minutes for questions, the very last slide I have is just about how to get in touch with me directly if that's something that you want to do. Of course, you can always contact Housing Action Illinois with questions or concerns, but if you want to contact me directly, there is my phone number, 312-640-2191, and then my email address. And an email is the better way to reach me because I'm one of those people who is not often at a desk, because I'm too busy running around in meetings or whatever. So email is the best way to actually get me, and I can call you back. If you want to join Access Living's advocacy alerts. I send out a variety of alerts about different kinds of disability issues. Just shoot me an email and say I want to join your listserv. That's totally fine. Or if you just want to talk about how can we work together to like kick some butt down Springfield, I mean, I'm totally down with that. So what I'd like to do is right now it's 11:15. I know we finished at 11:30, and I think that we have a few questions in the question box. And we should probably take a look at some of these. So let me see. I just need a little help. How do I expand this more? Okay. So I have a question here. Is that the top question? Okay. All right. So I have a question here about how well proposed plans impact the state's innovation project process, i.e. coordinated care organizations. And I think that's a really good question, because if you have the Secretary for Health and Family Services saying, we're planning for the next 6 months, next year, that's a big problem, because the implementation of the innovation process is going to take a while. Just remember that some of the proposed innovation projects are actually drawing down federal dollars. So the key thing here is to watch for what the state plans to cut in state Medicaid dollars. Because a lot of those state Medicaid dollars receive federal matching funds. You cut the state money, the federal matching funds are gone. Okay? So if you have particular proposals or projects or things in the works right now that you're working on, really pay attention to how much state money is going on. And what you need to do is you need to go to legislators, really, and tell them, do not cut this particular pot of state money that funds the program, because otherwise, you know, things, it's going to mess up these long-term planning, et cetera. Access Living has a few efforts like that that we are coordinating with other groups on. And so we're trying to make sure that funding for that we think is going to go for those issues is not cut at the state level. I mean, that's a big, big danger zone. And people don't understand that Medicaid is a patchwork of money. It's state and federal, and sometimes they work together. So, okay, so going to the next question. Okay, PowerPoint. Okay, I have a question here from, I would like to go and talk to be seen at the Capitol. When are lobby days for Medicaid? Well, there are a bunch of organizations that are going to be doing lobby days and so forth, but what I can tell you for Access Living is that we are planning to be in Springfield all day on this Thursday this week, and then we will be in Springfield every Wednesday for the rest of May. So starting next week Wednesday, every Wednesday we're going to be in there, and so if you would like to connect with us on Wednesdays, please let me know. Other groups, well, do you know if Housing Action is having lobby days, or? Okay, so if you, but just know that you can always set your own lobby day with your own organization, and that's great. But if you're an individual, please contact Access Living. We'll be happy to have you join us. Okay, let's see. And I think I'm going through the question thing right now. Oh, there's this question about, do you have to get a permit or permission for an official lobby day? And that's a really good question, and something that, you know, people have to learn. You don't have to have permission just to have a group of people show up at the Capitol and go visit the legislators. That's not a problem. The only thing that you have to have a permit for is if you plan to use a space at the Capitol for like a speeches or a rally or something like that. So, for example, you have to call like the state capitol, and I can't remember what it is, but there's an office that deals with permits and facilities and that kind of thing. You call those guys and you say, I want to be able to use the Capitol Rotunda on Wednesday, the 14th of May, or whatever, from 12 to 2, and you make a reservation, and they will make sure that you fill out the appropriate permit information and all that stuff. But if you feel like you want to reserve a space at the Capitol somehow, then I would urge you to call ASAP, because spaces get booked up. I know that spaces that are available to have rallies and such are, for example, the Rotunda, as named, and the Lincoln statue, which is outside the Capitol on the, I can't remember, the east side of the Capitol, I think. Anyway, so there's a statue of Abraham Lincoln, and sometimes there are rallies out there, and you have to get a permit for that. I think that you have to provide your own sound system, so you want to make sure to provide your own sound system. There, you can request chairs to be set up, so you want to be thinking about, do I need sound, do I need chairs, and so forth. I know that the Capitol doesn't really like it when people bring in signs, but people do bring in signs anyway. And one other logistical consideration is often lunch. And generally, I think they prefer that you eat your lunch outside or at the visitor center or in the cafeterias or whatever. Sometimes, like when you have a really big group and it's clear you can't really move them very well, the guards will just kind of let you eat where you're at. But it sort of depends on, you know, how they're feeling that day. So hopefully that helps with. So you don't need permission just to say, I would like to have a whole group of my friends go down and talk to legislators, you know. But, you know, if you want to have a space, then you need permission. And I'd also like to emphasize that if you've never done this before, just bear in mind that stopping by legislators' offices is good. But also, if they're in session, you want to make sure to go to the third floor in the Capitol. And at the third floor, that's the doors to the House chamber and the Senate chamber. And you can give your business card to the guy, like the security guys or whatever, at the door and say, you know, I'd like to see Senator Smith, and they'll take your card in to see to Senator Smith, and, you know, if you wait long enough, Senator Smith may decide to come out and see you. So sometimes there's a lot of conversations that happen with that. Also, at the beginning of session, when legislators are walking in at the end of session, as they're coming out the doors, that's a really good time to catch them informally. Okay, let me see if I have another question. Permits, innovation. Happy days. Thank you. Okay, and I think that's all the questions that we have for today. So I just want to say thank you to everybody who has managed to hang on to the conversation through here, and please feel free to email me with any questions you may have as follow up. Thank you.
And thank you, Amber, so much for this webinar. As I said earlier, I will be sending out the email with the recording and the PowerPoint. I know that some people have contacted me about not being able to open the PowerPoint, and I'll try and fix that or turn it into a PDF. And we'll also be putting these materials up on our website at housingactionil.org probably tomorrow. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.